You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Jennifer Langosch, who covers the Cardinals for MLB.com. Jen, I'm so pumped to be doing this podcast with you today. I've known you for a long time. I'm from St. Louis, so first of all, I read all of your work, and I love chatting with you.
Well, thanks for having me, Danny, and at least I know that you're going to ask some really good Cardinal questions. That's because right. You pay very close attention to what we do out in St. Louis.
That's right. Okay, so Jen, we're going to close the Stanton chapter. He had a press conference here in Orlando, and he said, St. Louis is not a good fit for me. It was not going to be the right fit. Do you agree with that?
It's interesting, you know, and it's interesting to hear his explanation about that, Danny. I mean, you look at the teams, first off, that were on his list of preferred destinations, the Cardinals, of course, not being one of them. And one of the reasons he said is he didn't think the Cardinals were as close to winning as, say, the Yankees, Cubs, Dodgers, and Astros. Right. Now, common sense also says look back to October. Those four teams were also the last four standing in the playoffs this year. So, of course, those teams, you know, coming off winning seasons maybe had an edge. But, you know, for the Cardinals, I think a little bit of a slap in the face that somebody from the outside doesn't see the talent that they believe they have. You know, that being said, you're talking about a Cardinals team that, you know, historically has played into October, two straight years missing the postseason, but not by much.
Right.
A team that won 83 games last year, and perhaps it's just a couple moves away from maybe moving up into being a 90-win team again. So, yes, I'm excited to finally move on from Stan, just because I'm looking for something different to talk about.
Yes.
But for the Cardinals, a great disappointment that they were not able to sell the city, sell the tradition, and sell the future of the organization to him.
Okay, so you mentioned the 83 win season, and I'm going to steal a quote from one of your more recent stories. You said, and this is about goals, so the Cardinals want to turn an 83 win team into a postseason participant again, and that's important for the organization. That is a part of their culture, their winning ways, but where does that even start at this point?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think for this team, you know, they entered this offseason knowing that they needed to help their offense, mm-hmm. knowing that they needed to address the ninth inning, you know, with Trevor Rosenthal out for the year, now no longer a Cardinal,
right.
and with several other relievers becoming free agents. Those were two areas they wanted to address. That being said, again, the point of emphasis is this team doesn't necessarily so far away. I mean, yeah. This is not a rebuilding project in St. Louis. St. Louis doesn't do rebuilds.
No.
So you have a team that won 86 games 2 years ago, 83 last year. The hope is that with some incremental improvements, that this is a club that compete not just for an NL Central title again, but can compete to get back into the World Series. So, of course, they're still looking to do a lot. This is a club that right now has signed just two players, Miles Mikolas, to help their rotation,
right.
And Luke Gregerson in the bullpen. That being said, I still think some bigger, bolder moves are ahead.
Yeah, it's only day two with the winter meetings right now, so I think that there's a lot of wheels spinning and maybe foundation being laid for something after. But let's go back to Luke Gregerson really quick. I actually just saw him Tuesday morning this morning. He was at a Fun at Bat event with kids at a local elementary school here in Orlando, having fun with them, which was really cool to see him. I know he spoke with Anthony Kastrovitz a little bit about the signing, and I'm just, you know, the Cardinals are, they're working, they're building, they're strengthening. Why should Cardinals fans like Luke Gregerson?
You know, he's a veteran reliever. He's been a durable reliever throughout his career. I think that's very key. You look at the Cardinals bullpen, I mentioned how many departures they've had. Since the end of the season, they've said goodbye to Trevor Rosenthal, Son Juan Oh, Juan Nicasio, and Zach Duke. You're talking about four relievers who, you know, the last year were very important at different points in the game. So, you know, Luke Gregerson, I'm not sure that he is their solution for the closer role.
Right.
The Cardinals are going to continue to look for other options there in the bullpen. But when you think about how he might fit as a seventh, eighth inning guy, I think he complements what they have really well. Again, a two-year deal for $11 million. Not a ton of risk to take on there. And very interesting, of course, too, that Luke Gregerson comes back to the Cardinals,
right.
which was the team that originally drafted him, and yet he never played and pitched in a game for them. So now Cardinal fans who maybe followed him, what, is that 11 years ago?
Yeah.
Now get to actually see him play.
He's from Illinois, so nice and close. Family yep. will be there. Maybe that that will help out as well. That always is nice, right?
Looking for a bounce back season, too. I mean,
yeah.
his season last year with the Astros was not what he had hoped. Home run rate went way up. But other peripherals say that maybe a little bit of an outlier there. Still good strikeout rate. Ground ball rate was kind of where his career norms are. So the Cardinals believe he's poised for a bounce back season.
Okay. All right. So Cardinals fans, let's talk about them for a second. People who are asking about J.D. Martinez and Eric Hosmer, wanting them to join the lineup, to get in there, to be a big bat, to be a big presence. What do you say to them who are wondering about those guys?
I think those two are probably unlikely. So this point, the Cardinals have spent most of their time focused on the trade market.
Right.
That's for a couple reasons. Number one, they like the options there better. They also like the cost of those options better, both maybe in control and also financially. Furthermore, you look at the Cardinals roster, they have a lot of kind of roster machinations still to do. I mean, they have an overcrowded outfield, and they have too many starting pitchers. Great problems to have, Danny. But one of the ways to address that is via trade. So the Cardinals are hoping to kind of use all that depth and parlay that into a move, a little bit bigger, bolder move on the trade market. So right now their attention isn't been on the free agent marketing, and I just don't think those two guys are the ideal fit for this club. So anything can happen, but I'd say unlikely that we'll see Martinez or Hosmer in St. Louis next year, at least as a Cardinal.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. So, Jen, you heard from John Mozeliak, who had mentioned that the Cardinals didn't seem willing to pick up just a one-year contract, a guy who's just going to be used temporarily, who's not going to be here for long-term. Is that right?
A little bit of hesitation there, yeah, Danny. And you know, of course, the reason is the Cardinals are trying to find an impact bat, not just for 2018, but for several years.
Right.
And, you know, you can fill it with a one-year stopgap, sure. You know, a guy like Josh Donaldson, if the Blue Jays are willing to trade him. Manny Machado, who we're hearing may be shopped soon here by the Orioles. That being said, 12 months from now, then the Cardinals are going to be doing this all over again.
Yeah.
So, that's not their preference. It's not to say it can't be done. Part of it depends on what the acquisition costs would be. Part of it, too, would perhaps depend on, you know, if a deal is made and they have an opportunity to try to extend that guy right away and make that contract a little bit longer. That's a little bit more palatable. But right now, their focus is on trying to find that impact bat that will be in the lineup for years to come, not a season to come.
And that's very much, if I'm going to say it, the Cardinal way.
Yeah.
As well. So if not Machado, not Donaldson, then who?
You know, they're still interested in the Marlins outfield. You know, we talked about Stanton and moving on past him. They have not moved past Miami's outfielders, though. Marcell Ozuna, Christian Yelich, both guys that the Cardinals feel could fit in St. Louis, you know, for a while. And we're talking about players with control, players with very favorable and friendly contract situations as well. So the interesting thing there, too, is you consider all the work Miami has already done to kind of siphon through the Cardinal system. They know the players. They know the prospects they want. So I think you know, there's a lot of foundation already built there for a deal to be made. So I still think one of those two guys might be their most likely target.
Okay. All right. So we're still waiting. We're still seeing. But we're going to look a little bit ahead to the future and talk about Alex Reyes. He missed all of last season with Tommy John. He found out in March right before. He got to spring training?
It's like the second day of spring training.
And found out that he needed surgery. He was out, coming back. So what can we expect to see from him? I do know, I was reading some of your work, that he's not going to start right away. His start's going to be pushed back. It's not going to be opening day. It's not going to be that week. And he's going to be coming out of the bullpen to strengthen his arm, to strengthen his endurance, his ability, his confidence, all of those things. But what can we expect to see from him?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, you talk about how can this 83-win team turn into a playoff team again. Guys like Alex Reyes being healthy again, that's a boost. And that's not somebody you have to go find in the hot stove season. But Alex's Tommy John recovery has gone as expected. No setbacks thus far. You know, he began throwing late in the season. So he's hoping, you know, right now to kind of go through a normal offseason throwing program. As you mentioned, the Cardinals, though, are going to be very cautious with him.
Yeah.
I mean, here is a young kid, of course, has never thrown a full season in the majors. And one of the things the Cardinals are concerned about next year is his workload and the innings that he can pile up. So one of the ways they hope to monitor and kind of control that is, hey, let's push his start date back till about May 1st.
Yeah.
Let's start him in the bullpen. And then if at some point down the road in the season they have a need in the rotation, you can slide him in there. Of course, a dynamic arm no matter where he pitches. But that way they can limit the innings. They can be smart about his usage. And, you know, a guy like Alex Reyes, we talk about a bullpen makeover. Gosh, he'd look pretty darn good there in the late innings as well. So a guy they're very excited about and very encouraged about his progress.
That's a bold, bold prediction there, Jen. I like that. So, okay, let's end things on what can Cardinals fans be excited about? What do you think they should be looking forward to? Instead of looking back, didn't get Stanton, you know, that's gone. That's in the rearview mirror now. So let's look ahead. What's something that they can kind of latch on to right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think Cardinal fans should be encouraged that the Cardinals, just because they didn't get Stanton, doesn't mean the search is over.
Yeah.
This is a team that I still think is going to be very active over the next several weeks. Will it happen here in Orlando? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
Oftentimes.
But that's okay.
But that's okay.
It's okay, everybody.
This is where you lay the groundwork. Yeah. And we've seen in recent years, Dexter Fowler last year, for instance, they announced the day after the winter meetings ended. So,
right.
I mean, they're not necessarily the team that makes the big splash here. But certainly there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes. This is a team that still would like to add a hitter. It still is interested in looking for pitching, both on the starting and bullpen side. And it's a club that, quite frankly, is unsatisfied by missing the postseason in two straight years. I mean, St. Louis, you know as well as anybody, Danny, they're hungry. The fan base does not, you know, handle not playing in October very well. So this is it's an organization that knows where it wants to get back to and believes it has a lot of young talent that can help get them there.
All right, that's awesome. So patience is a virtue here.
We'll try.
Yes, we will do that. I'm Danny Wexelman. This is Jennifer Langosh. She covers the Cardinals for MLB.com. We'll talk to you guys soon. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman, sitting next to Adam Berry, who covers the Pirates for MLB.com. This is a treat for me to get to chat with you, Adam. So we're going to start with the buzzing around Pirates Nation right now, because Gerrit Cole, his name, is being tossed around. And I want to tell you really quickly, I watched him play in AA when I worked for the Eastern League. Yeah, I watched him pitch, and it was a thrill. He got beaned in the head, though. Yeah, he got beaned in the head, so he wasn't in the game for too long. But it was really cool knowing that I was watching a guy who I knew would be a difference maker in the league. So let's rewind really quick. 2008, Yankees draft him, and they're interested in him again. But the Pirates are not shopping him around right now.
Yeah, they're not shopping him. They're not trying to get rid of him. They're not even necessarily dangling him. The Pirates are doing basically what they do, which is make their guys available, sit back, wait for the best offer. It's kind of what they did with Andrew McCutchen last year. I think it's probably very comparable in the sense that there's not a lot of urgency to make a move. They don't have to trade Gerrit Cole, much like they didn't have to trade Andrew McCutchen last year, and obviously they didn't. So I would not be surprised if Gerrit Cole attracts a great deal of interest. He's young. He's shown top of the rotation potential. He's still affordable at this point. He's under club control for two more years. There's a lot to like there for a team like the Yankees that doesn't necessarily need an ace, just needs a really quality, controllable starting pitcher. I would expect a lot of interest. I still don't think the Pirates deal him, but the Yankees are one of those teams that has a farm system that could make them change their minds. You know, somebody like Clint Frazier, a good outfield prospect, could make them change their minds. So I would expect Gerrit Cole to be starting on opening day for the Pirates, but this is definitely not the last time you'll hear his name. But that doesn't mean he's going to be traded.
Okay, another guy that we're questioning whether or not will be starting on opening day is Andrew McCutchen. You know when people are talking about you and they say that your ears are burning or your nose is itchy? I'm wondering if his nose is itching and his ears are burning, because his name is also buzzing around. What's the latest on him?
There's not been a lot of activity on him here so far that has filtered down to us in the media. The Giants seem like the most likely team to be interested, but some of their beat reporters have said that they don't want to take on the $14.5 million contract, which is odd, because we felt like that might have been the appeal of Andrew McCutchen. It's that it's only one more year under club control for $14.5 million. It's not a long-term commitment. You're probably going to get the best of Andrew McCutchen without having to pay for a potential decline. But otherwise, we haven't heard a lot of interest. You know, there are teams that make sense, the Blue Jays, still the Giants. I wouldn't rule them out until they fill their outfield need elsewhere. But right now, it seems like the Pirates might just be content to roll into next season with Andrew McCutchen in center field batting third, see if they can build around him, and maybe if they fall out of it, maybe look for a trade at that point.
We're talking a lot about guys who could leave the team, but we haven't really talked about guys who could come to the team and the needs of the Pirates and what they're looking for here. It's day two at the winter meetings down here in Orlando. It's Tuesday, right? Tuesday.
Yes, as far as I know.
Straight. I think it's Tuesday. So by Thursday, is something going to happen? Are they the team that builds the foundation here, or are they going to grab somebody and head home?
I think they kind of have everything they think they need in place right now.
Okay.
Like, there's certainly room for bullpen help if they wanted to do it. They could add an infielder if they wanted to, but they're kind of up against it as far as their budget goes. Attendance was down last year. They're already over $100 million, which would be a franchise record for payroll. You know, the core is in place. It's just that the core has almost been the issue the last couple of years in the way they've underperformed. Andrew McCutchen wasn't himself in 16, the first 2 months of 17. Gerrit Cole wasn't himself the last 2 years. Gregory Polanco was injured. Starling Marte was suspended. Jungho Gang hasn't been in the country. So there's not a lot of room when you just look at the roster and say, this is a position they need. There are areas where they can improve, but it's hard to do that given their kind of lack of payroll flexibility right now. So that's why we're talking about these guys who could move out, is because you would have to subtract before you could add.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about third base for a second and David Freese over there in the hot corner. So we use the term third base by committee route. So can you talk about what that means and who he could be sharing that position with?
Yeah, the idea is that David Freese is still potentially a starter at third base, but he's not an everyday guy. They learned that the last 2 years in the way that he wore down over the course of the season. And he even admitted it last year. He told myself and another reporter, just like, I don't think I can play 7 days a week. 4 days a week, maybe five. So the Pirates have a lot of utility-type infielders. If Josh Harrison stays, they could bounce him over there on occasion. And they have a bunch of guys, Adam Frazier, Sean Rodriguez, Max Moroff, all capable of playing second or third. So it's just going to be kind of drawing it up day by day, seeing who fits that day, seeing how Freeze is holding up physically. And obviously that's contingent partially on Josh Harrison still being in Pittsburgh next year.
Right, because he's being eyed, right?
Right.
He has some suitors out there.
The Mets and the Blue Jays are rumored to be in on him, or to have at least been interested or shown interest in Josh Harrison, which would make sense. He could play second base. He could bounce around for him at second or third. The Angels actually make a ton of sense for Josh Harrison because they need a second baseman, maybe a leadoff hitter. He'd be great, a great fit there. He's making $10.25 million next season, so that would be a salary that could move, clear up space for the Pirates to add elsewhere around the edges. I don't necessarily see that because he's so critical to their plans next year, in the sense that we're talking about him not only being the starting second baseman, but maybe the occasional starting third baseman. Not at the same time. That'd be
it's
weird.
A busy guy. Yeah. That'd be tough.
But they do have the depth in the infield to withstand a potential Harrison trade because of all those guys I just mentioned.
Yeah.
They have some younger infielders coming up. Kevin Newman, Cole Tucker, two of their top five prospects. So there is depth there where they could make a move. I just don't necessarily see it happening unless somebody really blows them away.
Have you heard from Clint Hurdle?
Not yet. We talked to him on Wednesday. We actually just talked to him Saturday at Pirates Fest, though.
Okay.
And so I've seen a lot of Clint lately.
I've seen a lot of you and Clint are like
He was on
friends.
My flight down here.
Was he?
And he is like the nicest man you'll ever see on a flight. He's the one who's helping people like put their suitcases in the luggage rack.
I love that.
Other than that, we've not actually talked a lot of baseball.
Yeah. He was holding court at the Little League Classic in Williamsport. Just story after story after story. And I just kind of wanted to sit there Indian style and listen, have some popcorn and listen to him tell stories. So are you anything you're anticipating hearing from him?
Not necessarily. Last year, it was interesting because they were talking about realigning the outfield, where they moved Andrew McCutchen to right field for what turned out to be 2 weeks, and moving Starling Marte to center. This year, they've already came out and said McCutchen's a center fielder if he's back, Marte and left, Polanco and right. Not a lot has changed with the roster, so it's basically just, you know, when we talked to him Saturday, it was him hoping for better from the guys that they already have. I would expect a little bit more of that. Maybe we'll get more specific as far as how he might look to sort out the lineup to make it more productive than it was last year, but Clint Hurdle didn't have a whole lot of tough decisions on his hands right now because there's not a whole lot of decisions to be made unless they make a roster move.
It's not a bad place to be.
No, it's kind of nice. He gets to come here and tell stories.
Yeah.
We could hear his voice booming from the Pirates suite the other night or the other day when we talked to Neil Huntington.
I love
Probably
that.
Entertaining them with stories as well. That's what he does.
Okay, we're going to spotlight Mitch Keller. He was named top pitching prospect in the AFL. Why should Pirates fans be excited about this guy?
I think he is probably closer to Jameson Taillon than Tyler Glasnow. Maybe even closer to Gerrit Cole in the sense that he's more polished as he is coming through Double-A right now. Like you said, he spent time in the Fall League. He'll probably reach Triple-A at some point next season. He looks like a safe top of the rotation pitcher at this point. He's not, you know, a high-risk guy. He commands the ball pretty well. He has a pretty full arsenal at this point. He's young. He's good makeup. The Pirates love guys with good makeup. It just seems to be very much in control and taking a very smooth trip through the minors at this point. You know, it hadn't been a whole lot of roadblocks. Hasn't been a whole lot of thus far. Yeah,
yeah,
of course, it's always a risk. But you could see him potentially make it to the majors and make an impact by 2019, which is good timing because that's Gerrit Cole's last year of control. That's Ivan Nova's last year under contract. And that's when some of these other young pitchers they have now start going through the arbitration process. So the idea would be that Mitch Keller could come up and be that potential next top of the rotation type arm up there with the Jameson Taillon, Chad Kuhl, Stephen Brault, Trevor Williams, and see where Tyler Glasnow's at that point.
All right, so we're just waiting to see who's maybe leaving.
This is a big hurry up and wait thing.
Okay.
These winter meetings.
Okay, well, that's we're going to do that too. So I'm Danny Wexelman. This is Adam Berry covering the Pirates for MLB.com. We'll talk to you soon. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with my good friend Adam McCalvey, who covers the Brewers for MLB.com. Adam, hi.
Hi, I'm very excited for this.
This is a treat for me.
Yes, it is a treat for you.
I said that for the past two people as well, so take that for what it's worth.
That's not very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So first, let's talk about the winter meetings, because I kind of feel like this is like a courting moment. You know, teams are kind of putting their best foot forward, but there hasn't been a lot of action here right now. I'm kind of, this is my first winter meeting, so I'm just trying to figure it all out. How would you describe the winter meetings?
Oh, it's very quiet and it's very different. I don't know if you've talked to any of the other writers, but we all did a story about the biggest winter meetings deal for each in history for each of the clubs that we covered.
Yeah.
So for me, it was in 1980, the Brewers acquired in one trade Ted Simmons, Raleigh Fingers, and Pete Vukovic from the Cardinals in this huge trade. And it was part of this massive winter meetings for Whitey Herzog and the Cardinals. Totally different era of cigars and bourbon and backroom deals and wheeling and dealing. It is so different now.
Yeah, we don't have that.
I think our friend Jeff Passan came up with a theory that I think really there's something to this. That part of it is this era of GM, these guys are so smart.
Yeah.
They're very patient. They're very analytical. The Brewers owner, Mark Attanasio, refers to David Stearns as agnostic. That's a really good...
It's a good word. It's a
$5
word.
In dealing with players. Thank you very much. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
And I think that these guys just approach this in a little different way. There's just less wheeling and dealing, and everything is just much more analytical, I think. And I think that partly explains the quiet meetings. Now, look, these guys are going to get signed. Like, Jake Arrieta is going to pitch somewhere next year.
We're going to talk about
JD Martinez is going to hit home runs for somebody.
That's
not
right.
The Brewers, bro.
Not the Brewers.
But, you know, these guys will find homes. It's just that there's no big rush anymore to make those deals.
Okay, let's talk about David Stearns for a second. So, Domingo Santana, his name's being thrown around a lot right now. But David Stearns says, listen, if we're going to trade this guy, we're going to get something really big in return. It's got to be really good. Feast your eyes on this kind of thing. How likely is that to happen, though?
I think unlikely, but possible, because everyone can look at the Brewers right now and see that they have a lot of outfielders at the major league level or, you know, right at that next level. And that is Ryan Braun and Santana in the corners.
Mm-hmm.
Then in center field, they have some combination right now of these two big prospects, Lewis Brinson, mm-hmm. Brett Phillips, and then Keon Broxton, who struck out at a higher rate than anybody in Major League Baseball last year, but also was a 2020 guy, one of a handful of players with Mike Trout that had, you know, 2020.
Right.
So that there's, you know, it's tough to think of Craig Counsell finding enough at bats, even though Ryan Braun isn't 150 game a year player anymore.
Yeah.
Finding enough for all of those players, that's too much. So there's a glut there. And if teams are going to look at the Brewers outfield depth as a way they could improve their starting rotation, which is Stearns' big, what he's seeking here.
Yeah.
They think the outfielders could be one area where he could deal from that area of strength. And if teams are looking at who do we want of this group of outfielders, if you assume they're not going to trade Lewis Brinson, Domingo Santana is a really good player. 4 years of control left, 30 homers with a .370 on base, a really good combination of patience and power, good arm in the outfield.
Yeah.
Just a good player. So it would take a lot, though, because if you're David Stearns and
you're
building... How about
if you're David Stearns? If you're David Stearns for a moment. Yeah. What are you asking for in return?
Well, I'd be about 10 years younger, which would be nice.
Would you have more hair?
What?
Just kidding.
Why would you say that?
It's a joke. You have great hair.
No, he would, you know, I would want a starting pitcher. Domingo Santana would get you a nice piece for your starting rotation.
Okay.
And that remains the Brewers' big search here is 4 innings. Jimmy Nelson, they're saying now, is probably not going to resume throwing until the start of spring training or sometime in spring training. And that's just starting to play catch and get through his progression as he comes back from that shoulder surgery. That's a big loss because he developed last year into a horse for the Brewers. Mm-hmm. One of the, you know, if you're Craig Counsell and other managers, they're doing different things now where a guy goes twice through the order and then they're going to bullpen, multi-inning relievers. And this is sort of the way we see baseball going.
Yeah.
In the postseason, you can do that every day and you're fine because of travel days and days. In the regular season, you need a guy or two that's going to give that bullpen a rest so you can use them on those other days. Jimmy Nelson was that guy. So they need innings to replace that if he's out until, you know, July 1, sometime after the break. And a player like Domingo Santana could theoretically get you a nice, controllable starting pitcher to plug in there. So, you know, the best trades are the ones that hurt.
Yeah.
It would hurt to give up Domingo Santana, but that would be an area where they could cover if they find the right
deal. No risk, no reward, right?
Exactly.
That's how it goes. Okay, let's talk about another guy, Josh Hader. His future is uncertain. David Stearns says he's going to ultimately decide where he's going to be. He's going to be in the bullpen. He's going to be starting rotation. What do you think?
I think it's the bullpen.
Okay.
He was being developed as a starting pitcher. Fastball slider, power fastball from the left side. Really nasty, that kind of Chris Sale whip action. Mm-hmm. The changeup is coming.
Okay.
It came on a little bit more at the end of the season. So if that changeup develops, you could see him as a really nice starting pitcher.
Okay.
But he was so good out of the pen as a weapon for Craig Counsell last year. And to me, the question, you kind of think about it like this. As a starting pitcher, you can impact probably twice as many innings as even an Andrew Miller-type multi-inning reliever.
Right.
As an Andrew Miller-type late-inning, multi-inning guy, you can impact probably twice as many games. So which do you value more? Do you want the guy who's going to give you those innings, or do you want the guy who's going to impact important games late, multi-inning appearances? And I just think that given the success he had in that role, he likes it. He likes the role himself.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good weapon, and I think that's where he ends up.
Okay, we talked about Ryan Braun earlier, so we're going to talk about him now. We're going to dig a little deeper. At what cost, or what will it take for him to be dealt?
I think the question is, the question is more to me, can you find somebody who wants that contract at this point?
Right. And that's not the first time this is the question that's coming up for him.
No.
This is always the question that comes up.
It is. And it's been. And remember, two seasons ago, the Brewers were close to trading him to the Dodgers. And that was at a time where the Dodgers really could have used a power hitting, right-handed hitter. He's an LA guy. At that point, the contract looked really good
compared
to what other players were making.
Yeah.
Now we're, 2 years further down the line. He was limited last year in the amount he could play. Calf injury, a wrist injury that bothered him. The numbers were way down. I think the window to trade Ryan Braun is probably closed. I mean, things can change as team needs change. And, team like the Dodgers is in it. They can spend a little bit. You can't say the door is totally closed.
Never with the Dodgers.
Or some of another big market team.
Right.
But I think it's looking more and more like. And look, Ryan Braun says this too. It's looking more and more likely that he finishes that contract. So that's through 2020. They'll, 130 games maybe would be a good number for him.
Okay.
And then because they have these other young outfielders that they feel like they can. For one, it gives you a spot to give other guys at bats. So it can be a good thing if Ryan Braun is able to produce in those 130 at bats.
Okay, we'll wait and see on that. 2017, let's look back really quickly. It was unexpected, exciting. Eric Thames, basically the story first couple months of the season. Do you think it was a good thing or a bad thing that the Brewers almost made the postseason?
Yeah, I think this is actually the simple answer is, of course, it was a good thing.
Right.
The fans were into it. Attendance went up. They got to within one game of playing in a wild card game. So, yes, it was. But I think this is interesting if you step back and sort of think about the bigger picture a little bit. The model that they were going for was the Cubs and Astros. That's how they sold it kind of to the fans of Milwaukee. That teams that go into rebuilding mode now, you can point to the last two World Series winners and say, look, if you give us 5 years to take a big step back, have a little bit of pain, we can build a good farm system.
It's worth it.
It's worth it in the end, right? And that is what I think the people of Milwaukee kind of bought into.
Yeah.
Then 2017 happened. And so it was good and it accelerated everything. And now they're, we can have a conversation about Jake Arrieta fitting with the unlikely, but look, not insane, not crazy.
Yeah.
But what they're not going to have is the way, if you look at those Cubs and Astros rosters, there were multiple years stacked up where they had premium, ultra premium draft picks. Carlos Correa is on the Astros because they were bad for a long time.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah, Chris Bryant is a Cub because they picked second overall the year Chris Bryant was in the draft.
Yep.
The Brewers, they got Corey Ray fifth overall in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
They drafted ninth last year. They got a really nice second base prospect, Keston Hira. He looks like he's charging to the big leagues pretty quickly.
Okay.
Now, this coming year, they're going to draft 21st. So they went from 5-9 to 21. That's a big difference compared to the Astros and Cubs, who had multiple years of top 10 picks.
Yeah.
Doug Melvin went through this, the former Brewers GM. We had this really interesting sort of a symposium with him once where he was talking about pitching specifically, but really I think it's true of all players. The really elite players in this game, if you look, very many of them are super high premium draft picks, top 10 draft picks. That is how a lot of teams get their cornerstone players.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And there's Mike Trout, there's exceptions
sure.
that come later in the draft. But the Brewers are just going to have to try to do this without a bunch, 4 or 5 top 10 draft picks. They're going to have to do it with two, plus make some smart deals.
Okay, that's interesting. That's a good point. Let's talk about the future, Lewis Brinson. So drafted 29th overall in 2012. He's currently 13 overall on MLBpipeline.com. in the Brewers organization, and number one, in Brewers organization, number one guy. So the concern earlier for Brinson was that the outfield was too crowded for him. Is there a concern now? What's the projected debut for him?
Well, look, he's a good enough player, five tools, that you'll find a spot for him.
Okay.
And Craig Counsell has done a really good job of getting guys to buy in this idea of connectedness. That was a big theme of his very first meeting as Brewers manager. So, you know, we all focus on who's in the rotation and is Hader a starter or a reliever and who's going to be your starting center fielder, where Counsell tries to get guys to buy into the bigger picture. So this is all a way of saying he'll look at the outfield group and say, we have four or five guys that we really like. Let's just get enough at bats for all of these guys to maximize their production. So say for Brinson, you also have Brett Phillips, a lefty hitter. Brinson hits righty.
Big fan of Brett Phillips.
Well, I think everybody. The writers love Brett Phillips. He fills the notebook. Yeah. But Lewis Brinson does too.
Yeah.
But it's not common to platoon your top, picks.
Yeah.
But look, the Brewers have done some other creative things. A lot of clubs are trying some different ideas.
Yeah.
That's one idea, to sort of share time with those two guys and see what you can get. And when one steps forward, you play the one. So I think Brinson is a part of this thing starting next season. He got a little taste last year, was not good in the big leagues, but he was their minor league player of the year. He's done what he needs to do at AAA.
Yeah.
It's time for him to be in the big leagues now. It's just a matter of how exactly they split that time.
All right. It's time for you, Lewis. It's time for us to finish up this podcast. It's been too good. I never wanted to end. In fact, I'm Danny Wexelman. This is Adam McAlvey covering the Brewers for MLB.com, and we will talk to you soon. Welcome to the 2017 Winter Meetings. I'm Danny Wexelman with Mark Sheldon, who covers the Reds for MLB.com. What's going on, Mark?
What's up, Danny?
How you doing?
Fantastic.
We're here in Orlando. It's very sunny.
It's a little chilly outside, so we're nice and warm inside.
That's right. We're hoping that the hot stove heats up a little bit for the Reds too, right?
A little more action, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to answer some questions today. I'm going to start things off with you, Mark, and talk about Billy Hamilton and his trade value.
Yeah.
He's stolen 56 bases every year since 2014.
Yes.
He's a little inconsistent at the plate.
Very much so.
I'm wondering, where does he fit? How much value does he have to another team?
See, that's one thing that's kind of hard to gauge for other teams. The Reds value him because of his speed.
Yeah.
Which also means he has a great defense. He's an elite center fielder, probably one of the best in the game. Even though he's never won a gold glove, he's one of the best center fielders in the game. And they really do value that for pitchers' ERA with a young pitching staff that gives up a lot of hits and runs. He gives them a lot more outs than they may have otherwise had. So that's very important to them. Now, when you look at baseball-wide, his lack of success of getting on base as a leadoff hitter is a ding. So some teams may not value him that way. As much as the Reds do, but I think the Reds will ask for a lot to get a return. He's arbitration eligible for the next 2 years. He doesn't make a lot of money. Obviously, free agency's coming, but the Reds very badly need him to become part of their offense if they keep him. But if they move him, they need to find a center fielder that could replace his defense, because no one else can do what he can do.
If you guys have questions on Facebook, make sure you put those in the comments. We're going to answer those in a second. But another question for you, Mark. We're going to talk about that outfield. It's a crowded outfield in the corners. You've got Adam Duvall, Scott Schebler, Jesse Winker. It's crowded out there. What's the Reds' solution to that?
Well, they have a couple ways they could go. The do-nothing solution is they keep all the guys, and Hamilton in part of that mix as well, and just do a rotation of four outfielders for three spots. Brian Price could play them all approximately 120 games and have one of their better hitters, power hitters, come off the bench, and either Duvall or Schebler, and then have Winker be as an occasional bench guy.
Mm-hmm.
But the more attractive possible option is to have Winker play every day and trade someone like Duvall or Schebler. And Duvall especially may be a little bit more of a guy that might attract some interest, because he plays really well defensively. He's hit 30 homers the last 2 years. He's been an all-star. He's got a little bit more of a reputation, and he's also controllable. He does not hit arbitration until next year.
Okay.
So that does give the teams that are looking to save some money but have a big bopper in their lineup an attractive piece. And that way the Reds can get Winker into left field or right field and have him playing every day, because they really think that he's earned the opportunity to be an everyday player. He did it in the second half last year. He hit very well. He actually exceeded expectations in some ways, especially with his power. His time is now.
All right. And speaking of that, the youth movement that the Reds have going on, they had the youngest opening day roster last season, and that's not changing anytime soon. That's the way that they're going.
Yeah.
So how does that benefit them in the long run?
Well, they were able to give a lot of these guys the last couple of years that while they've been out of contention, they've been rebuilding, especially this past season. They were able to give a lot of major league exposure to some younger guys. Mm-hmm. You saw Luis Castillo jump from AA to the major leagues. He became one of their best pitchers and now is a lock for the 2018 rotation. We saw Sal Romano, Robert Stevenson, Tyler Molly get exposure, and they're on the inside track. And then you have guys like Amir Garrett, Cody Reed, Jackson Stevens that are all kind of there. And
that's exciting for the Reds, right?
This is great news. They're trying to build for them. And then, of course, waiting in the wings is their number one prospect, Nick Senzel, who could very well make the team out of spring training. He's going to go to his first big league camp. He's blocked at third base by Eugenio Suarez, also a young player. And they're going to let him look at second base, shortstop, in the corner outfield spots. So there's a lot that Reds fans can see on the horizon, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe next season is not a contending year, but they feel that they don't have to do a whole lot here because they like the young roster they have.
All right, let's talk about Senzel for a second. You guys are sending in your questions on Facebook. Keep those coming in. Jason says, if Reds extend Suarez and plans would be to keep him at third, where does Senzel fit into the picture?
Well, they'll have to obviously find a spot for him. We talked about the corner outfield being crowded, and Senzel would be obviously another body to have out there, so they have to figure that out. At second base, they have Scooter Jeanette, who blew up the scene last year with over 25 homers and had the four-homer game, but he's not a lock necessarily for the whole long-term future.
Right.
So he could play second, and a lot of people think Senzel can play shortstop if need be. He did it in college. He also played second in college. He never played the outfield, so there's options. It's one of those situations. If you can hit, they will find a place for you to play.
All right. How about from Daryl, any chance to trade for Yelich or Osuna?
No.
No, just straight no.
No.
Not happening.
I don't see it happening. I just think the amount of prospects the Reds would have to give up, if they were about to contend and maybe they were going to be going for the NL Central, I'd be a little bit more open to that. And I think they'd be more open to that,
yeah.
But I don't see that, no.
Okay, I like this question from Pam, who asks, what is your projected starting rotation for 2018?
That's a tough question, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
I think you'll have among the veterans, Homer Bailey and Anthony DeSclafani, no particular order, Luis Castillo, Sal Romano, and Robert Stevenson, I think, will make the top five.
All right.
I think Brandon Finnegan probably gets in the bullpen, and then some of these other guys will also fall into the bullpen.
Okay, that's a great question, Pam. And we're going to talk about the bullpen because Ryan wants to know, how will the Reds solidify their struggling bullpen? His words, not mine.
Well, it was struggling lately because the rotation had the least number of innings last year, among the least number of innings, so the bullpen got really overworked. They only have really two locks coming back in Raisel Iglesias as the closer, unless he's traded, and left-hander Wandy Peralta. They're going to let Michael Lorenzen try out for the rotation as well. He's going to have a chance.
Okay.
And so they need to find maybe a veteran or two that can fill in, but they also have some of the starters that won't make the rotation be in the bullpen.
Okay.
And then they'll have to just kind of see what they can get out there. They have guys like Kevin Shackelford they liked, Ariel Hernandez. There's a young guy named Jimmy Herget in the system that they thought did pretty well at AAA. Those guys will have chances at the bullpen too, but I think they would like to have an experienced guy to come in and can kind of do all the roles,
sure.
Not necessarily one particular setup role or anything like that.
Fans are interested in who this team is going to get. So Jeff wants to know, what about Machado? Any interest?
No.
No, it's a no again.
No, Jeff.
I'm sorry about that. Okay, Dave. Dave wants to know, are there any veteran players that the Reds could target? Since this is such a youth movement, it's important to have those guys there, right?
Yeah, I don't know if anyone specific. The one name that I wouldn't forget about is Zach Cozart, who's their own free agent.
That's right.
They're going to let him see the market and see what they can get. I don't think he'll come back, but right now, 23-year-old Jose Peraza is slated to be the everyday shortstop. But I think if somehow Cozart was able to come back to them in a way, they would gladly take him back, have a veteran. They loved his presence. They loved having him on the team.
They have a donkey.
They have a donkey ready to, yeah, he's got his pet donkey. He doesn't have to move it. And it would be good for the team, but it may not be what he wants. I think he'd like to go to a team that can contend, but I would not give up on Zach Cozart just yet.
Okay, we have our last question. This is from Scott. He wants to know, who do you like as a sleeper to make the roster?
Wow. I don't know if he's considered a sleeper, but Senzel's got definitely a long shot chance. I think they expect him to start in AAA.
Okay.
I would say he's a sleeper. Tyler Molly's probably, I don't know if he's considered a sleeper because he's one of the top pitching prospects, but I'd say one of those two guys could make the team, and that'd be pretty interesting.
All right, awesome. I'm Danny Wexelman. This is Mark Sheldon for MLB.com. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Cubs reporter Carrie Muscat. This is a treat for me to get to chat with you today, Carrie, about the Cubs. We got a couple things on the list, but first, we're going to close the door on the Giancarlo Stanton trade. that door, that chapter is closed. But what I want to focus on about that is Theo Epstein, because Theo didn't waver in his pursuit of Stanton. He's aggressive. He's championing for his team. He's trying to give them the best shot at winning. So let's focus on Theo for a second. And from that perspective, what did you see about that trade that you liked from Theo's side?
What I saw about the trade that I liked was that it's a perfect fit for the Yankees. I do know that the Cubs did talk to the Marlins about it, but it was really more like just a cursory hello, we're here, we understand that he's interested, but they really couldn't take on that kind of money. So it just wasn't the right fit at the right time. They have a pretty good right fielder in Jason Hayward, so as much as Stanton would have been interesting in the Cubs lineup, I think they're okay.
Yeah. All right, Carrie, so we're in Orlando. It's a magical place.
Yes.
Magic is happening all around us. So what can you anticipate the next few days? It's been quiet here so far, but what are you anticipating the next few days from the Cubs? Anything magical up Theo's sleeves?
Well, this is day two,
yeah.
And they should finalize or find out whether or not Brandon Morrow has passed his physical. And that once they do that, they would have a closer in the wraps, which would be nice, either a closer or a potential closer. The Cubs are still kind of talking to Wade Davis's people, so there's a chance that he might come back, but with Morrow, at least they've got some insurance.
Yeah.
They're also kind of laying the groundwork with certain agents regarding some other pitchers, because really pitching is the number one goal this down here. If Mickey Mouse could leave them a pitcher, they'd be good.
Okay. So I want to go back to Wade Davis for a second. So Wade Davis and Jake Arrieta, the odds of them having a reunion with the Cubs are pretty slim, right?
The odds of Arrieta coming back are very slim to none.
Yeah.
The odds of Davis coming back, though, there's a little bit of a window there.
Okay.
Because I think Wade was really happy with how it went in Chicago, really happy with being back with Joe Maddon,
yeah,
who was his manager in Tampa Bay. I think that connection was really good, so I think that's not as horrible as it's not as far-fetched. Far-fetched is probably it's still a possibility.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the NL Central for a second.
Okay.
Cubs dominated the past two seasons.
Well, although they did, they won it the past two seasons, but this in 2017, they had to rally.
Yeah, they earned it. They earned it. Yes. So, Theo's expressed that just because they went out and got Tyler Chatwood doesn't mean that they're not done. And we just talked a second about starting pitching, but let's talk a little bit more about that. And is there somebody in the next few days you could see them getting, or do you think this is going to be a more drawn out process? Are there names that you're hearing?
They've been in communication, or they've been kind of looking at Alex Cobb, who is a free agent with the Rays.
Right.
They've been looking at him. I think they would prefer to go free agent route if they could, so that they don't have to trade one of their guys, because
right,
there was some talk. Theo talked at the end of this season about how this might be the off season where he might have to part with one of the young kids, might have to part with an Addison Russell or a Javi Baez, and they don't want to do that if they can avoid it. But Theo also told us that he knows what that feels like to get rid of a player who's like really tight, like, because when he was with the Red Sox, he had to trade Nomar Garciaparra, and Nomar was one of his favorite players. So
and that core is so tight, right? The
yes.
Cubs core. They're so close, and those guys have been through thick and thin together, so I can't imagine having to do that.
And they're not just close in terms of that, but they're also close in terms of age, in terms of team control, in terms of salary. So, you want to keep Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo and Javi Baez, and you want to keep those guys together as long as you can and take advantage of that talent. It's homegrown talent, let's go with that. So.
Okay, so one of those core guys, too, Kyle Schwarber. So Richard Justice wrote an article. It's called Not So Crazy. And he suggested that the Red Sox and the Cubs, do you know where I'm going with this right now?
So Richard doesn't tell me anything.
Well, I'm going to tell you. David Price to the Cubs, Kyle Schwarber to the Red Sox. What do you think about that?
It'd be interesting, and it sounds like something fans would concoct. The problem is, Theo absolutely loves Kyle Schwarber. And it's not just what he does on the field, it's what he does for the team in the clubhouse and what and the, a lot of the intangibles that that guy brings. And I don't think I've heard a general manager rave about a player and the qualities that someone like Kyle has as much as Theo has. Now, of course, he'll probably turn around tomorrow and he'll trade him. But he really, this guy has been impressive since even before they drafted him.
Right. And he's working on his being in the best shape of his life.
He is. And if fans have seen any photos of him, he's leaned up big time. I mean, I saw him all season. He was doing one of those meal programs, you know, where they... It is tough, and it's really tough during the season to keep your weight off because there's so many, let's just say, distractions in terms of food. So, but he's been on one of those programs where they deliver the meals.
Okay.
So he's been doing that, and he lives in Florida in the off season, and he's got a great training facility, and he's also got a super hyper Dalmatian. So I'm sure that chasing the dog around has kind of kept him. I mean, would Kyle Schwarber be a better fit for an American League team? Possibly,
yeah.
You know, but I think he wants to get in great shape so that he can show people that he's a better outfielder than some people think. In fairness to him, he's actually not a bad outfielder. The problem is that when he makes a mistake, it's during the playoffs and it's always magnified. And so that's kind of a bad thing.
All right. So we'll wait and see about that.
It's interesting. Like I say, Richard didn't mention that to me, so I will have to go find Richard.
You have to go talk to him about that one. Don't tell him I told you, though.
Okay,
so we're going to spotlight Adbert Alzolay, pitching prospect, right-handed. I'm wondering why you think Cubs fans should be excited about this guy and his projection for making his big league debut.
This Adbert is a really interesting young guy. He didn't learn baseball till he was 6 years old, and his grandfather took him over to a diamond and just said, hey, let's go play catch, and taught him that. He decided at 13 he wanted to be a pitcher. He grew up in Venezuela, went for a tryout. One of the Cubs scouts saw him playing, went for a tryout, and he only threw like 12 pitches. And he thought, uh-oh, that's it. I'm done. You know, didn't have a chance. They stopped him. They said, that's all we need to see. He did the 12 pitches. Boom, he got the job. They signed him to a contract. So I think that's just a little background stuff on him, but he pitched at Class A, High A, Myrtle Beach, did really well this year, pitched a little bit at Double A, didn't do quite as well, but did okay. Pitched in the Arizona Fall League, and I think that's where his confidence really soared because, as you know, in the Arizona Fall League, you've got guys that are pretty close to being ready for the majors.
Right. They're getting in a couple extra at-bats.
Right. But he won't be ready opening day, you know, but I wouldn't, if he continues to progress the way he's progressing, I wouldn't be surprised if you would see him late in the year. And that would be really nice for the Cubs because they've really had a hard time developing pitching in their system. They've had, you know, position players, they have those out the wazoo. But pitching-wise, it'd be nice to see another pitcher come up. And this kid, he's got a really nice curve, really nice fastball. He's got to work in that third pitch. But let's keep an eye on him.
Okay. We will definitely do that. Carrie, my last question. Any big, bold predictions for the next couple of days in Orlando at the winter meetings for the Cubs?
You know, the winter meetings, a lot of people think that they have to get a deal done here. And I know fans don't want to hear this, but really a lot of this sometimes is just laying the groundwork. I have not gone to the MLB.com winter party, the holiday party, because I always get a sense that something's up. And usually the Cubs make a deal when we have our holiday party.
They know. They know it's coming.
And I've always been home, so I've missed the party, but I get a deal. So whenever the holiday party is, keep track of that date.
Okay.
And the Cubs might make a move then.
All right, I'll keep that locked up here. I'm Dani Wexelman. This is Carrie Muscat, covering the Cubs for MLB.com, and we'll talk to you soon.